Well, well, welcome back again, Sarah,
Amy.
And very glad that she came along today. Now I invite you to come forward. If you'll come around to this side of the podium up here, please, and your address, your questions to her. Sarah, please. My name is Van Christou. Thank you so much, Sarah, for a really enlightening talk, very thoughtfully prepared and given. I'm mindful, as I stand here, of what's going on in France at the moment. The tragedy that they're facing right now is due to insensitivity to exactly what Sarah's been talking about. I'm not just being aware of the difficulty that immigrants face in the community, but doing something about it. The French people didn't do that. And as a result, they've got a Holocaust that they're going to have a very long time, and you're going to have to spend a great deal of energy and time and money trying to solve it. The question that I'd like to direct to you, Sarah, is, do you feel there's adequate funding coming in at the educational level, early on in school, in our system, so that these students, these children of these immigrants, can be properly handled? They're not just given the crumbs off the table educationally of what we have to offer.
Thanks, Dan. No, I don't feel that there is adequate funding available for school systems to deal with the diversity, the populations that they're seeing today. School funding stops, or at least is based on numbers, as of September 30th. So depending on the population in the school, as of September 30th, it will depend on, that will bring in the amount of funding. So for kids who are coming into the community beyond September 30th, one, there is not sufficient funding, which will create difficulty and hardship both for the students themselves and, of course, the scholastic community. We very, very definitely need to put a lot more of resource into English as a second language appropriate for the levels. We also need to look at funding for settlement issues at the school level as well, because kids have got to be made aware of and be allowed to understand the process through which they are going in order to be able to acculturate that much better. The other area that funding has got to be put into the school system is that education, public education about racism and discrimination and cultural context and cultural difference. If we are not only educating immigrant children but also our own children with respect to acceptance and celebration of diversity, we are going to then hopefully avoid the situation in France. And hopefully what we can do is look at those sorts of situations that have happened in France and other places in the world and learn a lesson and be proactive in our response.
My name is Debbie Gregor Ash, and I'm interested in what happens when an immigrant comes to Canada with a religion that is very, very different from anything we've got here.
A lot of immigrants who do come to our community and are of different religious affiliation have difficulty. They're isolated. There are not that many diverse religious groups within the community. Luckily, we do have a mosque, the Islamic Center, and that does provide some spiritual facility for a number of our clients. However, people on many levels are just having to sort of create their own places of worship, their own gatherings of spirituality. Often too, religious differences will create major misunderstandings within the community. As a Canadian will try and understand or will observe a particular observance or ritual that they do not understand at all, have absolutely no idea where the history of this particular ritual comes from, and will thus translate that into a hostility as opposed to trying to understand what's going on. Deb just brought up to me a situation recently where we did have an African couple that were having some difficulties, marital difficulties, and she was going to leave, and the husband came into our office. He was very, very distraught. This is not a good situation anywhere, and certainly not acceptable within his culture. And he had a feeling that she had not been completely true to her marital vows, and he had threatened that what he was actually going to do was make a living sacrifice on his front step of a sheep, and he was going to get his children to walk through the blood of that sheep in order to be able to cleanse them of their mother's sins. Now, perfectly understandable when you think of the cultural context that this person came from. Not very understandable when you consider his neighbor's reaction to that particular thing. So very gently one has to explain that in Canada perhaps that's not the most appropriate way to deal with his situation, and to provide him and work with him on a plan of action that is going to help him overcome that particular situation and promote his independence with respect to the way in which he is going to react to life situation.
Thank you. John Boris is my name. Ma'am, I appreciate your presentation. It was as good as I've noted at this mic for a long time. Enough detail, but not too much. And presenting the problem as it really is. We here are just so fortunate that we're cushioned to a large degree with these problems. To give you an example, if you come to Canada with a French background out of a French-speaking African country, let's say, you'll be in Montreal in no time, because Montreal is perfectly fluent. Canada calls itself a bilingual. But on the other hand, there's a problem, because over in Canada, or should I say here, let's say, we're having a problem with accommodating French-speaking people as they come in. And you go to the United States, and you know, in the United States, we always look at the United States as a boiling pot, and we said, oh, no, we don't want to do that. We're going to let everybody be their own, exercise their own rights and their cultures and everything. And now, we are seeing that that is not enough. As a matter of fact, in the United States, the southern third of California, which is probably 10 million people, is being pressured to keep the Spanish language used there, because it's overwhelmingly English, if you take the all of California as one, but the lower third of California is actually Spanish-speaking. So all I'm going to ask you is a question. Do you see the problem, and how serious do you think it is? It's showing its head right now. Is we've got, if you come from a, doesn't matter where, you've got to settle your differences between yourself and either a French-speaking group or a English-speaking group. And what you better do is sooner or later decide to at least join one of those groups and give up what you can. Now, you don't have to give up too much, but if it's pushed, it's not right, but if you forget it, it's not right. My parents couldn't speak English. Well, my father could, of course. But it's that's the way it is. And you're better to put up with it, and we manage. But there are other people who will say, no, you got to be this way or this way. And I think we on North America continent receiving that problem right today. The papers are full of it. Can we have a comment, please?
Luckily for us, we live north of the 49th parallel, where we do embrace multiculturalism and bilingualism, and we do make efforts to facilitate that sort of thing. There is French immersion, for instance, in the Lethbridge public and separate school systems. There is also the Francophone school that has been set up for children who come from families where there is actually an active French speaker. It's interesting that you should bring this up, actually, about the French, because recently in Calgary I was invited to meet with a group of French journalists from Le Monde and various other newspapers who were interested in coming to see what Western Canada had to offer people who were considering immigrating from France. And it was interesting that they came to Western Canada as opposed to Quebec, because that is obviously where traditionally you would expect them to go. And they seem to be quite satisfied with the fact that we were able to illustrate to them that there is an understanding and a celebration of multiculturalism, and that language is, one's own language is to be celebrated, and that there are also methods by which we can facilitate your maintaining your own language or hanging on to your own language, but also also providing them with information about the fact that settlement is quite hard work, regardless. And if you have chosen, or even if you're a refugee, if you are in a different country, there is an awful emphasis, a large emphasis on that individual to embrace the host society. And really, when you think about it, it makes sense. The host society is the majority. We are the ones opening up our country, our economies, etc., for immigrant newcomers, visitors. But as I said, we're very lucky in Canada, because I do feel that we still very much wholeheartedly embrace that concept of multiculturalism and respect and celebration of other people's cultures and languages.
I'm Trevor Page. Sarah, thank you for an excellent presentation. Immigration, migration, and global climate change, I think, are some of the biggest problems that we're going to face. And I want to pick up the question I started to ask you at the table. And that's basically the connection between the federal government, the provincial government, and organizations such as the one you represent, in terms of where economic migrants are placed. Now, I'm not talking about refugees, but you indicated in your presentation that of the 170 that you receive a year, 70 are refugees, so the largest proportion are in fact economic migrants. Now, okay, Canada, if I remember my figures correctly, is moving to increase its number of immigrants from 245,000 or 246,000 last year to 270,000 per year, which is a major increase. It's quite possible that here in Lethbridge we do need some skills that we don't have, but are you feeding back to the provincial government on what type of skills we need here, or are they just dumped on you regardless of the skills or lack of skills that they have? I mean, what sort of feedback are you giving, or perhaps you're not asked to give any, or they don't listen to you? I mean, are we doing this in a planned way, so in fact we don't exacerbate the situation and bring about situations which Van has raised regarding the way that the problems that we have in France? Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Trevor. That's a really important issue, and I must say, when I heard that the feds and the provincial government were planning on opening the doors to one and all, come on in, I was a little bit concerned because this kind of strategy has got to be holistic and has got to be coordinated. It has to be coordinated from the federal government through the provincial, through the municipal. The federal government has had in place a strategy over the last decade or so to settle the prairie and the small centers. Most immigrants, including refugees, who come to Canada want to go to one of three large centers, and that's Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver, and it's perfectly understandable as to why. There are established ethnic communities within these cities, which means that there extends a support system that you will not find necessarily in a small place like Lethbridge, Alberta. However, these three large centers are struggling. Their infrastructures are having an awfully hard time keeping up with the influx of immigrants. And at the same time, we in the prairies and in the West are being depopulized. What we have to do, as far as, let me just go back to your question about whether or not we're being allowed or being asked for feedback to the province. We at Lethbridge Family Services, Immigrant Services, are funded both by Citizenship and Immigration Canada, the Fed, and also Human Resources and Employment from the Alberta province side. We, in order to continue getting that funding, we do have to provide long and involved reports as to how the situation in the community is going, and that is definitely one of the ways in which we are able to relay our needs, our wants, etc., to the provincial government. We also, in Alberta, we're lucky to have an umbrella association, the Alberta Association of Immigrant Serving Agencies, to which I belong. This is an umbrella group of all of the settlement agencies in Alberta, and there are between 50 and 70, I believe. We have about 20 members, but there are many, many organizations out there. This association is a conduit to the feds and the province. We meet twice a year. We have consultations with all of our funders. That will also include family, FCSS, PDD, United Way, etc., as well as the federal government and the provincial government. So yeah, we are being asked for feedback. We have also been asked to participate in a number of both federal and provincial roundtable discussions over the last year that have preceded the various policy plans that are in place for the future. So we are being asked for feedback, certainly, and we are facilitated in giving that feedback, but I can't emphasize enough that this initiative has got to be so coordinated. It otherwise it won't work. And we see that now because the federal government has absolutely no jurisdiction over provincial licensing bodies or registries. Thus, the federal government is merrily opening its doors and inviting lots of skilled immigrants in, and yet when they get to the province, they're finding difficulty finding work. So there's an area that is not being coordinated particularly. It's an enormously difficult job, however. I'm not criticizing, but just stating the fact. Thanks.
I'm Damien Dorchner. Just wanted to ask, is there one or two particular ethnic groups that are arriving here in Lethbridge, or is it more of a diverse group of people that are arriving, and perhaps why, if there are particular groups coming to Lethbridge, why they would be choosing to come here?
He's a Man United supporter.
I used to be too, the red and white scarf. In Lethbridge, lately, over the last couple of years, we are seeing distinct groups coming from the Sudan and Afghanistan. The Afghans actually are settling very, very well in this community, and we now probably have a community of over 100 people from Afghanistan, which for a town our size is pretty significant.
In the city or on the farm?
Oh no, in the city. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And those are people that I would know of, that have come through Citizenship and Immigration. These people are generally refugees. In the past, we saw a lot of people from Iraq and Iran. Those numbers seem to be dropping off. We also saw, when I first started working with Lethbridge Family Services, we saw a lot of Colombians. And these were city folk, intellectuals, academics, etc. I have heard that we can expect large numbers of Colombians again. We haven't seen them for about 4 or 5 years because troubles are stirring up again in Colombia. Colombia has the largest number of internally displaced people in the world. And the people that we're going to be seeing now are less those from the urban areas and more from the rural areas, as they are being moved out of their farming communities, etc., by the various troubles that are going on. We see different groups coming in as global situations occur. Now, we were asked immediately after the 9/11 and Taliban, etc., whether or not we were going to see lots and lots of Afghans immediately. It generally takes a number of years, because these people, remember, refugees by definition are those who have been pushed outside their own borders, okay? So it takes quite a long time to travel from place to outside your borders. Then you have to make application to UNHCR or an embassy for refugee status. And the processing time can be months, years, decades. So yes, we do follow global movement, but there is also going to be, there's going to be a lag in time.
My name is Kara Selacruz, and I'm a student at the University of Lethbridge. Thank you for the great presentation, Sarah. I just would like to know, Sarah, if you can now comment on the services that LSS provides in helping break down those barriers in which immigrants should overcome when they settle to a new their new host country, as in terms of the host program. And I was very fortunate to be a part of it. And so, being that we are concerned citizens, that, you know, we help make sure that we are providing a welcoming community to these new immigrants, and so I was wondering if you could comment on that.
Thank you, KRS. I would love to. And KRS has been a really, really committed volunteer for Lethbridge Family Services, Immigrant Services, and we do have a number of very committed individuals who are very, very keen on assisting in any way they can. The federal government funds us to run something that we call the Host Volunteer Program. And what this is any interested permanent resident or Canadian citizen within the community who has sufficient knowledge of Canada and life within Lethbridge, we would love to see them to come down and basically befriend a newcomer. And by that, I mean that range of activities could cover anything from meeting for an hour for coffee a week to assisting with homework, not too much, engaging people in English language conversation, opening up your own networks to individuals, because as we know, so many jobs in communities like ours are not actually accessed through the traditional routes. It's more who you know, or an extended network. And so this introduction into that, both in business network, social networks, we see host volunteers as the most incredibly valuable people, because what they do basically is enhance the settlement service that we provide. We can't possibly do everything for everyone. And as we all know, the sociology of living is a very complex issue, particularly when you come from a different country and you have no support and are very, very strange to the customs, etc. So thanks very much, KRES. In fact, I'm going to make a plug. If anybody is interested in becoming a host volunteer, please do call us at Lethbridge Family Services, Immigrant Services. Can I give the phone number? 320-1589. We'd love to chat with you about those opportunities. And as I said, the amount of commitment that you make can be as short as an hour and as much time as you want per week. All of it is really, really very much appreciated. Yeah.
Thank you, sir. I wonder if you would cast any light on what seems to me to be a wretched situation indeed, but I don't know the facts. I haven't been there. I don't know. I know very little bit about it. I'm referring to the Brooks situation, where there's up to 500 or 1,000 people, blacks brought in from the lowest levels of some other economies elsewhere in the world, brought to this little town that can't possibly sustain them in any way with regard to women or fun and other pursuits that they have a right to do after they work. They live in pretty fundamental living quarters, I gather, on that. So that's that's only hearsay because I haven't been there and I hesitate to think about it because I don't know. But I sense there is a problem going there. It's not going away. And in a slaughterhouse like that, for those kind of level jobs, I think we should know more about it, don't you? Excuse me.
Okay. Yeah, Brooks is a real anomaly in Canada. It's, yes, certainly. It's a town of about 7,500 people whose population has been increased by about 25% over the last 5 or 6 years. And that is as a result of Lakeside Packers. Lakeside Packers pays very, very well. It also has an excellent recruitment strategy. If you bring a friend in and he or she works for 6 months, you get $500. So there's a major... what's the word I'm looking for? Thank you. Incentive to go and settle in Brooks. Now, Brooks is, however, unfortunately, perhaps an example of where settlement services have not been coordinated particularly well, and that's really nobody's fault. I mean, a large industry moved into town and, of course, attracted many, many people, who want to make enough money in order to be able to support families. It is also it also offers the kinds of jobs where you perhaps do not need particularly good facility of the English language. You can be mentored with someone who's worked there slightly longer than you. You can be shown how to go through the motions. It's very much a conveyor belt kind of a job whereby we have had a number of clients come in with repetitive stress injury, that kind of thing. Brooks is struggling. I'm very, very pleased to let you know that the one and only settlement agency in Brooks, the Global Friendship Center, has just been admitted to ASA, our umbrella association. Brooks does have difficulty, however, because it is not considered to be a destination for refugees. And most of the people that they are receiving and dealing with are refugees. They have secondarily migrated from many, many places, Vancouver, Calgary particularly, because the economic options are there. On the first day of the strike, my friend Doreen, who runs the Global Friendship Center, told me that she had 400 people in her office that day. I said, how on earth were you able to even write down 400 people's names? And this is often the case in Brooks. Now they, however, are receiving more funding through the province because the province realizes that there's a huge issue here. And as you said, Gordon, it's not going away. Very, very difficult both for the immigrant population and for the population, the host population. I mean...
Where are the blacks coming from?
Oh, well, actually, it's not just African or not just black. Last I heard, there was something like 76 different nationalities represented at Lakeside Packers. Now, you hear mostly about the Sudanese because that is the largest group, certainly. Sudanese and Ethiopian and Somalians are...